listening to the voice of the University of Alabama, WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, it's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting live from the WVUA-FM studio, 90.7, the Capstone, on the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. B.J. Gunther, and I'm the host of the show. And in case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. And you can listen to us each Tuesday night live at 6 o'clock on 90.7 FM, or you can go online and listen to us at wvuafm.ua.edu, or you can download the Crimson White app and click on the 90.7 live streaming link. And as always, we'll be taking questions via email, so if you have those, please email those to me at brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu, and of course I'll be giving that out throughout the show and checking that email. Also, if you have any ideas for upcoming shows throughout the spring semester, this is just our second show for this semester, email those to me, and of course I'll consider using your idea. Tonight's topic is one that I had on the schedule last semester, and I think I had to cancel for some reason, but I've had a lot of people, when they found out what we were doing tonight, a lot of people were excited and really wanted to listen to the show, because many of our students here at UA and across the country are impacted by this, and so I think it'll be a fun show tonight. The title of the show is Gamers, the Psychology of Video Games and the Impact on the People Who Play Them. I have two guests tonight. Hopefully, our second guest will show up in a few minutes. He's scheduled to be on at 6:30, so we'll watch out for him. But my first guest tonight is joining me on the phone from Madison, Wisconsin. Sean Green is an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He received his PhD in Brain and Cognitive Sciences from the University of Rochester in 2008, and then completed a postdoc fellowship in machine learning and computer vision at the University of Minnesota before joining the faculty at Wisconsin in 2011. His research focuses on human learning, particularly in the design of training paradigms to improve human visual and cognitive skills. Wow, that's a mouthful. Dr. Green, are you with us?
Sure am.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a long introduction, and it sounds extremely complicated. What is machine learning and computer vision?
So machine learning are from the perspective of someone who studies psychology, approaches to understanding how to analyze data. How do we best model complex types of data, and so we use what's called machine learning approaches. In essence, they're fancy statistics, I would say.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being on the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I read a little bit of your credentials, but how did you become interested in this topic and this type of research?
Sure. So I have always been interested in the brain and how people learn, the neurophysiological underpinnings of learning. So, how do changes in the brain produce changes in behavior? And so as an undergraduate, I joined a lab that was doing research on the effects of congenital deafness on visual abilities.
Uh-huh.
So if you are born deaf, you don't have auditory input going to the parts of the brain that, are expecting auditory input. And so the question is, what does that part of the brain do in the absence of the sensory stimulation? And are there impacts on visual perception? You can imagine that if you are without the sense of hearing, well, maybe the visual system changes in some perhaps compensatory ways. So I joined a lab that was focused on that, and as part of the research, we started doing studies examining performance of undergraduates, and we found that some segment of the undergraduates were performing unexpectedly well.
Yes.
And when we kind of went through their backgrounds, we found that the undergraduates that we saw that were performing unexpectedly well on these kind of classic measures of visual abilities were those that were playing certain types of very fast-paced video games. You know, this was in the late 90s. It was when we started to see really very fast-paced video games.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started to look at the impact of playing these fast-paced video games on the brain and behavior.
Well, the way that I found you was actually through an article that you were mentioned in. The title of the article is Cognitive Benefits of Playing Video Games. It's from Psychology Today, and I think the year was 2015 that this article was released or published. And, you know, we hear so much on the news and on social media about video games and the negative aspects of video games. So it's kind of enlightening to hear some cognitive benefits of playing video games. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, I think the first thing that's really important when talking about these effects is that not all video games are created equal.
Mm-hmm.
So the analogy I like to use is the food. In the same way that there's no global, or, you know, in general, no global effect of eating food on the body.
Uh-huh.
It depends on the type of food, the carbohydrates, proteins, fat, minerals, vitamins. The same thing is true of video games. You know, not all video games are the same. You know, they're not the same in terms of dynamics, so how things progress through the game, mechanics, how do you interact with the game. The content of games differs dramatically. And so because of that, the impact of, games differs by game. The type of games that we've studied in my lab that pertain to perception and cognition are what we call action video games.
Mm-hmm.
This is a class of games that have lots of fast motion. They have many items to track simultaneously. They have what we would say a real emphasis on peripheral processing, meaning that you have to monitor kind of the full screen all at once, because important things often kind of peek in at the edges. And so we've seen that playing this subtype of game, but not necessarily other types of games, improves a whole host of visual and cognitive abilities.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen changes from what we would think of as very, very low-level visual abilities. So just your ability to distinguish different levels of lightness or luminance, all the way up through what we think of as pretty high-level cognitive types of abilities. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, your ability to rapidly switch between competing tasks. All of these are positively impacted by playing this one type of video game that we call action video games.
You know, I know this is going to come up eventually in our conversation, so I'm going to go ahead and go there. One of the articles I read in doing research for the show tonight, and I think I actually developed a question regarding this. You know, in recent months, there's been arguments about how playing video games can be addictive. And, of course, this is causing all kind of panic, moral panic, and political pressure. But in one of the articles I read, the title of it is Psychologist says rush to pathologize video game addiction is dangerous. And that article was written last year in 2017, and I can't see what the journal was from, but what's your opinion on that? From what the article said, it argued against this, that video games are not addictive necessarily, because there's really not much evidence to show otherwise. What's your findings, or what have you learned?
So I think some of these arguments come down to question of, you know, obviously there are, you know, what we'd call, so I'm not trained as classically as a psychologist, I mean, as you know, who's my PhD is in brain and cognitive sciences, but I've become somewhat versed in this topic, and obviously there is stigma associated with mental disorders, right,
yes.
with diagnostic labeling effects.
Yes.
You know, we worry about, creating stigma around behaviors. And so I think people who are concerned with, say the rush to pathologize certain behaviors, worry about that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
I would say people on the other side of that would say, well, I mean, there's a subset of people that are suffering. And so to some extent, the way, clinical care care works in the United States is, you know, in many cases, in order to receive help, there needs to be a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no diagnosis, you know, there's practical considerations mm-hmm. that come into
basically,
the mental health system.
Basically a medical model. That's basically what a medical model is, yeah.
And so a whole host of these debates are kind of that nature. From my perspective, I've done work on this topic, again, trying to convince the community to not treat all video games as the same thing.
Right.
You know, in the same way, it doesn't really make any sense to ask whether drugs are addictive, right? You know,
right.
Drugs are a category that includes everything from Tylenol to methamphetamine.
Yeah.
It's kind of not a well-posed question to ask whether drugs are addictive. The same, again, is true of video games. And, you know, we've done work in the lab to look at, you know, the extent to which certain types of games are more or less associated with what I might call problem gaming, video game addiction, and has lots of terms.
Right.
I'd say it's unquestionably the case that there are a subset of individuals who play video games in such a way that it causes actual harm to their life. You know, they will damage relationships, they'll not do schoolwork if they're in school, they'll suffer problems at work. They'll spend money that they don't have.
Yes.
They'll do lots of the things that you might associate, say, with problem gambling or gambling addiction. You know, they'll know that they play too much but feel like that they can't stop. They'll indicate that they feel restless when they do stop. Where I think a lot of people get confused when we talk about problem gaming or video game addiction is that hours of playing, like the amount that you play, doesn't actually even typically show up, depending on the scale you use, as a symptom.
Right.
You know, there are plenty of people who can play video games often, and they don't suffer any negative consequences. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're not playing video games in such a way that they're damaging their relationships.
Right.
They're not playing games in such a way that they're not going to school. They just like playing video games.
Exactly.
It's a hobby.
Exactly. In this article, it says something to that effect about the science is what's bad, you know, because in the author in the article basically used the analogy of, you know, when someone really likes to go to the library and read books and they just can't put down that book, are they addicted, you know, and they kind of compare it to that, something like that.
Yeah, and I think mm-hmm. The actual science of it would indicate that would, you know, say that person is not addicted to books, you know, unless, you know, imagine that person goes to the library every single day because, you know, they're reading a series that they really love, and because of that, they stop going to work, they stop bathing, they stop eating, you know, they do these types of things that damages their real life. That's when it would rise to the level of a pathological condition. It's not, you know, these aren't just, you know, people who are playing video games as a hobby.
Yeah.
These are people who are playing video games in such a way that they are really damaging their life, and it's a very small segment of
right.
the population
right.
That shows this. You know, it's not just your everyday college student who likes to play Call of Duty or likes to play League of Legends. It's a small segment of people that are, you know, really playing games in such a way that their life is being damaged, and they feel a loss of control.
Right.
You know, they know that they have a paper due tomorrow, but they feel like they have to just keep playing this game. They've got, you know, levels that they have to achieve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's when, for a clinician, they might think that it transitions from, you know, a pastime or a hobby to something that, you know, they might require some help for. I'd say, you know, the research is super new, right? And so in the DSM, it's still listed as a condition in need of further research. You know, we need to know more about, you know, even simple things like prevalence. We need to know more about things like what games are more or less associated with these types of behaviors. So I'd say there's still a lot of work to do, and, you know, I have no particular dog in this fight about whether or not it's treated as a clinical disorder or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I treat that as a an insurance reimbursement thing as much as anything. You know, but I'd say where I come down is that there's definitely a very small subset of people that play in this way, but it's not your average person who just likes to play video games.
Sure,
You know, what I tend to tell parents is, you know, they'll say, oh, my child loves playing these video games. And I'll say, well, are they doing their homework? You know, are they still socializing with their friends? Do they still listen to you? Then, you know, they wouldn't meet diagnostic criteria.
Right. Let me take a break for just a few minutes. If you'll stay on the line, we'll come back. I want to ask you, I've got some email questions that if you're willing to take those. And then I want to talk about children and teens and how the brain could possibly be getting rewired. So stay tuned. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
The show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7, The Capstone, and tonight we're talking about video games and how they impact people who play them. My guest is a professor of psychology. That's correct, right, Dr. Green?
Correct.
Professor of psychology from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Dr. Sean Green. And we left off talking about, well, I wanted to ask you about, you know, do video games affect the developing brains of children and teens?
I mean, yeah, to the extent that, I mean, you know, all experience does, right? And we know that developing brains are more susceptible to change via experience. The technical term that we use is that they're more plastic. They're more capable. The brain is more capable of change early in life, and it becomes progressively less capable of large-scale reorganization as you get older. For sure, young children and teens, if anything, the expectation would be that they would be more affected by video games, both positive and negative, than adults. Although, you know, again, this is an area of research that, you know, is still very young, so I'm not sure that the evidence would say that that's true, but the theory would at least indicate that.
Well, and I talked to a colleague earlier today, and she knew that you were coming on the show, and she knew what the topic of the show is for tonight, and she was saying that the schools now for the young children are advising parents to limit how long their child plays video games. And I had no idea that was happening, because I guess some parents just don't know when to limit their child, or, you know, I just felt like it was so, I guess, very important to do that, to be able to limit that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to think that, you know, the best experience for a developing brain is variety of experience.
Yeah.
You know, you want, you know, lots of experience. You know, I think that's a perfectly sensible thing for parents to put restrictions on, you know, the amount of time. Whether there's, I know for a while the, you know, American Pediatric Association had some, you know, number of hours. I don't remember what it was. It's probably in practice not a one-size-fits-all for all children. But some types of limits, I'd say, for any activities are what you want, especially, you know, developing children. You want, you know, mental stimulation, you want physical stimulation, you want different types of all of those. It seems, you know, perfectly rational to me to limit, to set some kind of thresholds for those.
Yeah, many of the articles that I've read talk about how the instant gratification is gained while playing the video game, and it touches the neurotransmitter, the dopamine in your brain. One of our first email question actually asked that. Is there research to show that the same areas of the brain are used for sports as are for gaming?
I missed the first part. Are used for what? And also gaming?
Sports.
Oh, sports.
As are for gaming.
I mean, so to the extent to which the experiences overlap. So you'll see, for instance, with certain types of very active sports, things like basketball or soccer, you'll see some similar, say, visual effects as you see from playing action video games. Right? We don't think it's necessarily, you know, the fact that it's a video game. It's really the experiences that matter. So if you're having an experience that puts a lot of demands on your peripheral vision, well, you know, that's the type of thing that might lead to some changes in peripheral vision, whether it's, you know, an athletic competition or it's a video game. Mm-hmm. As for the question of dopamine, there is research, there's lots of dopaminergic pathways, but there's one particular dopaminergic pathway that's very important both for learning and plasticity. It also tends to be the neural system that's implicated in addiction. Mm-hmm. And so that's certainly a pathway that's activated by video games, you know, reward processing. The extent to which, again, you know, depends on the video game, and this is something that, you know, there's just not that much research on, is, right. You know, by type of video game, how does this work? You know, lots of people are still coming from the perspective that, you know, well, all video games are equivalent, and it's taken certain parts of the field time to shift to this idea that just because one video game activates the brain in a certain way doesn't mean that they all do.
Uh-huh. Have you ever heard of the term game transfer phenomenon?
Yes. So,
what is that?
I've heard it. So basically, game transfer phenomena is the tendency to see in the real world and, kind of have automatic processing when something in the real world matches something you've seen in a video game.
Okay.
So Mark Griffiths, who's been doing really great research on video games for, you know, decades now, I believe he's in Nottingham in the UK, is someone who I know who's looked at this phenomena. You know, if you play a video game, for instance, and there are, you know, let's say there's a video game where there's lots and lots of, garbage trucks, and they have a certain, you know, color scheme, and, you know, they have a certain shape, and anytime you see a garbage truck, you have to, you know, do some type of behavior. Maybe, wow. You know, you're playing a game where you have to, you know, touch the garbage trucks, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
If in the real life you see a real one, game transfer phenomena would be when you kind of have those automatic feelings. You know, you see this garbage truck in the real life, you've been spending a bunch of time in the video game where every time you see a garbage truck, you have to touch it. Game transfer phenomena would be you have this automatic urge to touch it. I know people will, you know, report having feelings, say, with Tetris, and I believe Mark Griffiths has done some research on this where, you know, you see geometric shapes playing Tetris.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have these automatic associations, mm-hmm. when you see a similar L piece or you see a similar T piece in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this kind of, you know, tendency to create these automatic mappings between certain stimuli in video games and responses. And then you see the same stimuli in the real world and you have this desire to do the same stimulus or the same actions. Fortunately, we have kind of layers and layers and layers of cognitive control that, by and large, keep us from,
yes.
you know, acting the same way in the real world as
exactly.
we act in a video game.
Exactly.
But often, you know, you'll have these, you know, you'll realize that you have this automatic association that, you know, you see this thing in the real world that you got used to seeing in the video game, and, you know, you'll at least have this little, this moment where you kind of feel that connection.
Right, right. One more question. And it's an email question. What's your opinion about using gamification? And I don't even know if that's a word. Gamification in a learning environment such as in an online course.
So gamification is basically the idea of using what they might call game-like principles.
Okay.
So, you know, use certain types of reward structures, certain types of activities. A lot of it is actually, you know, from psychology, basically operant conditioning. You know, you're trying to reinforce certain types of behaviors. I would say that, you know, people have been interested in what we call gamifying behaviors, both in education and health. So, for instance, lots of insurance companies will try to gamify health behaviors. You know, if you walk a certain number of steps, you get a certain number of points. You
mm-hmm.
know, you go to the doctor to get a wellness checkup, you get some points. Education will do that. So lots of, you know, these little educational games, you know, they're basically educational games. In practice, it hasn't been as successful as I think people initially thought they would be. And part of it is just because there's a mismatch between the reinforcers and what people want. I mean, they're not often reinforcers. So I've been called, you know, for instance, to consult for companies, and, you know, they'll say, well, we're having this problem. We're offering our employees these reinforcements, but it's not shifting their behavior, which I would say, well, you know, the technical definition of as a reinforcer is something that increases the behavior. So
right.
you're not actually giving them reinforcement. You're giving them something that they don't want, and thus they're not changing their behavior. And so I tend to find that that's often the case in gamified education. You know, you're working towards little stars or, you know, these things that people just don't treat as reinforcement. And so it doesn't lead to the behavioral shifts that you might
expect.
Want to see. You know, that's kind of the difficulty. You know, video games do a really, really good job of creating this setup where you want, you know, you want to do these actions because you want what the actions will give you, right?
Yeah.
They act like real reinforcers. When you try to gamify things, often you're like, all right, well, you don't want to do this behavior, but I'll give you a gold star for it, or I'll give you these 10 arbitrary points.
Uh-huh.
And it just, in practice, has not had the success that people hoped that it would. But it's often just not necessarily implemented in the best possible way. So I would say it's, you know, theoretically a really good idea, but it's not always been instantiated in the best ways.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been so interesting. We've got another guest coming on after the break, but I really appreciate you being on the show and taking the time out to call in and answer some of my difficult questions. They seem difficult to me, but thank you so much. And for those of you listening, we're going to take a break right now. We'll be back with Terrell Grant. He's a UA student who is president of the Gaming Network ABXY Club here on campus. So I'm excited to talk to him. Come back and listen to us. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight about video games and how they impact individuals who play those games. My second guest tonight is Terrell Grant. Terrell is the president of the ABXY Gaming Network. It's a club here on the campus of the University of Alabama. I have no idea what it stands for, but thank you for being on the show tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? What year are you? What's your major?
Oh, well, I'm from Prince George, Virginia. It's a bit in Southern Virginia near Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a public relations major with a minor in psychology.
No.
Yes.
Okay, you could help me co-host the show sometime.
And I'm a junior right now.
How did you, obviously, in your generation, you've probably been playing video games for all your life, I would estimate. How'd you become the president? And first of all, what does ABXY stand for?
ABXY, each letter corresponds with a different button on like a game control pad.
Can you tell I don't play video games?
No.
I would know that.
I've had people who played video games all their life didn't get it.
So how long has the club been in existence? Because honestly, until I started doing research for the show, I had no idea. Now, some of the other counselors that I've talked to about the show tonight, they have known about the gaming club because they've had other students mention that or they're involved. How long has it been around? Do you know?
Way before my time. Mm-hmm. I think maybe 7, 8, 9 years ago.
Yeah. What do y'all do? You meet like once a week? Do you just play games or do you talk about new games or am I getting up into your business too much?
Oh, no, that's no problem. Like, the purpose of ABXY, the way I see it, is to be a place where anybody who wants to play a game but doesn't have anybody to play it with,
yes,
they can come to ABXY and find a community, different people who share their interests, their likes, and they can just play. Because there's a lot of games out there for, like, more than one person. And if you don't have anybody to play it with, especially if you're new, there's just...
It's not so much fun. That's right.
Exactly.
It's not so much fun. Were you able to hear some of my interview with Dr. Green?
A little bit of it.
What's your opinion on how much someone should play a video game? Like, what's the longest you've ever played a video game in a day?
In a day.
It's okay.
There's kind of two different sides to that question. The first would be, I guess, as a college student who has a part-time job.
Okay.
I would say on a day where I work and study, maybe 3 hours, a little bit before bedtime.
Yeah.
On the weekends and during like big breaks, like summer or
when
winter,
you're free.
When I'm free, I woke up one day at 10 and didn't stop playing till 1.
Stop it.
It's okay.
Can I read you something that's going to scare you?
Oh my.
I mean, no, it won't scare you. This is from an article that I was researching for the show tonight, so I at least could appear to act like I know what I'm talking about, even though I don't play video games. The article is called Game Theory, and it's from Neurology Now, the journal, and it was written in 2014. And it talks about this kid, 17 years old, who basically was all that in a bag of chips on World of Warcraft. But everything else in his real life was bad. Right. And so he said, I never saw my real friends. I gained weight, became lazy, and spent nearly all of my time slumped over my computer. This is from him who he said he played up to 18 hours every day for nearly 2 years. And interestingly enough, he made a documentary film on YouTube. If anybody listening is interested, it's called IRL in Real Life. It's about 7 minutes long. I watched it today. It's so interesting. It basically talks about how he created a character in World of Warcraft, but then how it overtook his life and how he had to get his life back. It was very interesting for 7 minutes.
Right.
But the email question that I wanted to ask you, we got another email question. Do you feel that, what do you feel is an acceptable amount of time per day for a college student to play video games? Is that setting you up?
Oh, that's not setting me up at all. I've given it thought before. I don't want to start a question, like an answer like this, but I think it depends.
Maybe.
If you have a lot of free time and you just don't have any interests, like clubs or volunteer work, mm-hmm. then I don't think there's anything wrong with devoting
18 hours.
Maybe once a week.
Okay.
A week. And that's generous. I don't think that outside of special circumstances I've ever played that long. Like what I told you was an outlier.
Yeah, yeah.
18 hours a day, that's...
What do you think most kids are playing? How long do you think most kids that you know are playing a day? Is it more than six? Less than six? I'm just going with six.
Well, most of the students I know are busy.
Yeah.
I think that it's more of a weekly basis of 6 hours as opposed to a daily basis because there's just no time.
That sounds better
right.
to me, you know, just hearing that because, you know, we talked a little bit. I talked with Dr. Green just for a little bit about addiction. Does it become an addiction? This year they have come out, the powers who, you know, rule the psychology universe with the DSM and the ICD, which is... you can look that up if you're listening, but it's how we diagnose or how those of us in the mental health profession give a diagnostic impression. But they have announced that there is now a gaming disorder. And a lot of people in psychology are very angry at this and disagreed with this because it's kind of like, there's not a lot of research on it, as right. Dr. Green said, and there's not a lot of evidence. And how do you put an addiction in a hobby category?
Right.
That's the way I'm going to word it. What do you think?
I think that people who have naturally addictive personalities, they fall under that category of like a video game disorder on account of the fact that some games are designed to attract those kinds of people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like a game that has a lottery system or something called a loot box system where you pay money and you don't know what you're going to get, but you're going to get something. And it might be good, it might be bad. That attracts the kind of people who will spend a lot of their time trying to get to that next high of achievement.
It's like, a rush.
It's a rush. Yeah. Absolutely a rush.
Yeah. What are some of the positive things? What are some of the positive ways video games have impacted your life or could impact a student's life?
Well, I know for a fact I wouldn't have the friends I have now without video games.
Oh, so social.
Absolutely. When I first got here as a freshman, like from Virginia, states away from home, from family, from friends, I was just lost here. And then I saw a flyer for a group of people who were going to meet up to play a video game, and I decided to check that out. And until he left last year, I had met my best friend there. And I've like the friends I have now, I met them at a video game club, and just because we all shared the same passions.
Same interests. Yeah, and you know, I would have thought the opposite because in my mind, I picture kids playing video games alone in their room. I mean, literally, I have had to go before, not necessarily just for somebody who's playing a video game all day, but I've had to go get kids out of their rooms who have isolated themselves, you know? So I'm a little bit surprised to hear you talk about the social aspect of it. You know, that's really cool.
Yeah, I can understand that. There are some, again, I think it depends on the person because there are some people who don't want to interact with others.
That's right.
But like there are other people who want to make friends and be social, but the people just don't share their interests.
Yeah, and I think some people who maybe, how do I say this? Maybe some of their traits would be to be shy or inferior even, or have some low self-esteem, and they're going to gravitate toward playing video
Right, like
games.
naturally introverted people.
So counter to that, what do you think are some of the negative? I mean, besides taking way too much time, I guess, and not getting schoolwork done, or you work. I mean, if you started missing work to play video games, that would be a
That would
problem.
be a problem.
That's serious. So what do you think are some other negative effects that you can think of?
I think one negative effect that would impact a lot of people is the fact that games are getting a bit more expensive to maintain as a hobby.
How much? I have no idea.
Like, I can't account for inflation because I don't know nearly enough about
This new
math.
game, Fortnite, have you heard of it?
I've heard of Fortnite, yes.
How much?
The base version of it's actually free to play.
Okay, but some of the others like that, how much would it be?
Depending on the game you buy, it could range from $30 to $60. But a lot of games like Fortnite are free, which is why they attract so many people.
Yeah.
And then there's the
Are they as good as the paid for games?
some people would say yes.
Okay,
The fact
just
that
curious.
just getting that amount of enjoyment from a free title.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to buy things. Some games you have to buy things like microphones and different controllers and maybe a new system if you want to play
Equipment,
it. Equipment.
like we're on right now.
Exactly.
Wow, it can get up.
It can
Can
get up
cost you.
there.
That's why you're working, isn't it? That's really it.
Fuel the habit.
Oh. So that's a big negative. You're right. It is expensive. And I have had kids before say I'm saving up money to pay for what one of them came out a couple of years ago, and it started with an F and I can't remember it, and I'm embarrassed to say. But he like waited on that game, and he came back the next week and he was like, I bought the game. I bought the game. You know, he was so excited about it. Did you hear us talk, myself and Dr. Green, talk about, and maybe I'll take a break and then we'll come back and talk about this, but the last question I think I had for him was about using games for classes. So hold that thought and we'll be right back. I think we're supposed to take a break right now, and then we'll be back for our last segment. So stay tuned. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. Tonight we are talking about video games and how they can impact you, or someone you know. And I've got Terrell Grant. He is the president of the ABXY Gaming Network Club here on campus. He's also a junior majoring in public relations and is from Prince George, Virginia. We were just talking about that a little bit at the break because I vacation in Williamsburg, which is close, somewhat close to there.
Little bit.
When we took, when we went, before the break, I wanted to ask you, have you ever taken, Dr. Green and I were talking about the gamification of classes. Have you ever taken a class that used video games in the classwork?
Real video games. I don't think I've ever taken a class that's incorporated it into the lesson, no.
Yeah. I guess, do they exist here? Have we ever, I mean, would you know that? I don't know if you would. Maybe some of your members of the club might be, you know,
I know that
developing that.
I know some professors are thinking of a way to incorporate video games and different ways to stream them and like incorporate them into their lessons. They're trying to put them They're trying to put them into their work, their classwork.
I think that would be neat and innovative. I'm right. sure other universities are doing that. I've had students before who wanted to work in the gaming industry.
Right.
You know, I can remember one student, one of my favorite students, she actually wanted to write the music.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, which would be cool if you think about it, because most video games' music is amazing. I mean, the ones I've seen on TV, because, you know, I don't play. Okay, another email question. Let me see if you may or may not can answer this, but I think you can. Do you feel that gaming is an outlet for aggression or can create aggression? Like screaming at the TV, throwing things, remote control, you know, that kind of stuff.
I think that there are some games that are designed to help relieve aggression.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're designed to give you a bit of a pick-me-up, an easy win at the end of the day. Because I feel that there are many games that require focus and calmness. Because if you're aggressive going in, you're just going to compound on that aggressiveness because you're going to mess up and lose over and over again.
Yes, and that's another question. Has playing video games helped you with failure?
I would say yes.
I mean, you're not a failure, but we all fail.
Absolutely.
I mean?
There are some games where... there's some games in my past that I've played where I just blame everybody else for what happened. My system, my TV, my controller, the car honking outside the window, just everybody
distractions,
else.
Distractions, yes.
But eventually, as I got older and started playing different games, I started to be able to look at myself and say, I made that mistake. Mm-hmm. I have to correct that. And if I correct it, everything will be all right. Or some things just happened out of my control. It's like, oh, well, what am I going to do about that?
Right. Have you been able to... transfer that into your real life?
I would say so. I'd say that it's helped me be able to roll with the punches, as it were. I'm able to get past setbacks and obstacles a little bit easier because I'm used to it, because my pastimes involve it.
Yeah, and I'm sure you mature. I mean, you know, you're obviously probably playing different, I mean, maybe you aren't, playing different video games than you played like in 10th grade.
Yeah.
You know, so you've evolved. And with that, you've matured in how you can handle the outcomes of the games.
Right.
You know? Do you ever play several video games at one time? Can you do that?
Multiple video games at once, it really depends. Like, there's a genre of game, it's like turn-based strategy, where everything doesn't happen until you stop and make it happen.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm just really lagging along in something else, like waiting to find a match, I'll turn that on and get a few rounds in,
yeah.
And then I can stop and I won't affect the game anymore, and I can go back to the other game I'm playing.
Pause.
Yes.
What are some of the most popular video games amongst college students right now?
College students right now, I would say Overwatch is one of them.
Yes, I've heard students talk about Overwatch.
Huge, huge game that anybody can play.
Is it more fantasy or is it more... combat, I guess you could say. I don't know what you'd call it, but fantasy, sci-fi.
It's a first-person shooter.
Okay.
That is very reliant on team-based combat. Like, you have to have a good team to play it well.
So, Overwatch, name some more.
League of Legends.
That's pretty old, isn't it? I mean, it's been around, hasn't it?
That's been around for a while.
Yeah.
It's one of, like you said, a fantasy game.
Okay.
It's kind of, it's absolutely a team-based game where, again, you have to work with your team, otherwise you're not going to succeed in anything.
Is World of Warcraft still in?
World of Warcraft, I say, has fallen off a bit to the wayside due to the fact that there's so many other options and ways to play with friends online. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's just gone from the scene, but it's definitely less popular than it was.
Is there, you may or may not know this, is there a comparison in your group between males and females? Are there more males in the ABXY group than there are females? I mean, I would guess there would be, but I don't necessarily think that the girls play less video games than guys? I mean, I don't know if you can answer that.
In the club, I wouldn't say that. I'd say that if there's a girl in the club, she's playing as many video games as one of the guys who plays video games. At least not, they're playing as much as a regular person, not as much as one of the really high level players.
Serious players.
Yeah. the ones that are really living and breathing that game.
I just thought about that because I don't have a lot of girls, women, who I see for counseling who mention that, even as a coping mechanism or even just as a hobby.
Right.
You know, I talk more about it with guys. Can you think of any more games that are right up there?
I mentioned Overwatch, League of Legends, PUBG, Player Unknown Battlegrounds. That is taking off.
Is it new?
It's pretty new. I think it came out within the last year.
Yeah.
It's not officially out yet, but people are playing like the beta, the demo version a lot, and people love it.
So it's not free?
I believe right now it is
free. Because it's a demo.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if we have on WVUA, I don't know if we have a radio show devoted to talking about video games. I think that would be a really cool radio show.
Oh, really?
Maybe it's something you should consider. because I think there's enough students out there who would love to talk about this and maybe even call into the station, you know, and want to talk about it.
Perhaps.
Putting it in your head, Terrell. What about, let me see if there's any more questions. How often do y'all meet?
ABXY meets every week in the Ferguson Center on Wednesday at 6 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Wow, 4 hours.
Yes, that is the day where we don't play video games, we play tabletop games. Like,
what are those? I'm kidding.
But yeah, for the people who don't know, it's like board games.
Are we talking like ping pong?
No, not ping pong.
Okay, it's when you say tabletop, I'm from 100 years ago.
Right, right. It's like board games.
How fun.
And like card games. People even sometimes play Dungeons and Dragons there. Just for
people
everybody.
People still play D&D?
People absolutely still play that.
Oh my God. That was a sign of the devil in the 80s. You know that, right?
I've seen a video about a church going against
I'm telling
D&D.
You the truth. What about... what types of games do you play? Like, do you play cards?
I used to, but that's fallen off for me. But there's still lots of people who play it.
So really, it's just kind of like hanging out with a lot of people who have a lot of stuff in common with you, you know?
Absolutely.
That sounds fun, you know? But did you say it's once a week, every Wednesday from 6 to 10 at the Ferg?
Yes, in the Ferguson Center lounge area.
Okay.
And then every other week, we will meet in the Riverside Community Center, and we will have like actual video games there. Like,
so you have the equipment there.
Yes.
How many people are in the club right now?
I would say currently we have a few dozen.
Wow. Who consistently come?
The people who come is probably one dozen on account of the fact that people get busy. Yeah. They can't make it out every single time.
Does it cost anything?
We do have dues, but they're optional.
Okay.
And if you just want to join and show up and hang out, perfectly free.
That's cool. How much are the dues?
I believe the dues are $10 for a semester and $20 for a whole year.
Is that to play?
Oh, no. You can show up and play any game you want for free.
Cool.
The dues are optional for different benefits later on.
One more question. Do you ever go to the national, you know, like Comic-Con? Is there a national conference meeting for gamers?
I would say there's several different conventions that people who are enthusiastic about games go to.
Mm-hmm.
I think one that's passed recently is MAGFest. That was a pretty big video game convention that happened, I think, last month or this month, a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a convention that is hosted by a club on campus called Comic-Con.
Yeah.
That happened last weekend. Well, just past weekend.
Wow, we just missed it.
We just missed it.
And it was here on campus.
It wasn't on campus. It was in Birmingham.
Oh, in Birmingham. Did you go?
I did not go this year.
Wonder how many people were there, like thousands.
From what I see from their pre-ticket sales or pre-registration, like 4,000.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge for that kind of a conference.
It is.
Especially in Birmingham.
Absolutely.
Know? Hey, thanks for being on the show. This has been fun.
Thank you for having me. This has been very
interesting. You should really consider a radio show because that would be neat. If there's not already one on the air, and I don't think there is, we might have had one in the past, but I'm just not sure right now. But that would be a good topic, I think. But anyway, thanks so much.
Well, thank you.
Let me make a few announcements before we leave the air. This show, I always announce this every week, this show is recorded and podcasted, And I will, when it's edited, it will go up on the audioboom.com website. You can also go to the Counseling Center website at counseling.ua.edu, and it has a link to Audioboom. If you want to listen to this show or some of our past shows, I want to make a few announcements about some events that we have coming up in February. The second and the third week in February, information packets about common mental health concerns and available resources will be placed on all the doors of all the dormitories. So be looking for those. On February the 25th is the Spring Suicide Awareness Walk from 2 to 4 p.m. And the walk will start at the Counseling Center and it'll conclude at the Walk of Champions. So if you're able, come and help us raise awareness and learn more about suicide prevention and the resources available on campus. And finally, on February the 27th from 6 to 8 p.m. in the FERG, join the Counseling Center and university programs for an event focused on body appreciation and body positivity. Come eat some snacks and participate in interactive crafts and learn strategies to foster an appreciation for the skin you're in. And that's part of Eating Disorders Awareness Month, I believe. So if you're able to do any of those, it's fun. Just come out, and it's always fun to get free food. As always, I want to thank the people who have made this show possible. Dr. Lee Keyes, he's our executive director at the Counseling Center. Terry Sickers of the Office of Student Media. My production assistants, Catherine Howell, who's out with the flu tonight. Lizzie Zeman did a great job on the board tonight. And Caroline Harris, always there for me. My colleagues at the Counseling Center, the WVUA staff, and of course my guest tonight, Dr. Sean Green and Terrell Grant. Join us next week. When we discuss conquering irrational thoughts. So thanks again for listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. Houndstooth and Hard Hats is coming up next, hopefully.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling.
Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests